Hello, everyone. Welcome. I'm Carrie L., and this is Carrie L.'s HeartLink Show. And as I connect to as many hearts as possible, we are creating more freedom, light, and love, one interview at a time. My programs will bring you insights into the great awakening that is underway on planet Earth as we approach 2012. I'll be keeping you abreast of the latest tools available for anchoring a greater and healthier reality into your life. I'll be interviewing leading-edge experts in the metaphysical, scientific, paranormal, and spiritual realms. Stay tuned for the next hour as I speak with a real-life Indiana Jones, someone who is an anthropologist and mystic, Dr. Hank Wesselman. And at the bottom of the hour, you can call in with your questions. And the 800 numbers are available right there on the Internet. But first, a few announcements. If you would like to be a guest sponsor and promote your work, as I interview you, I will give you 5 minutes on our show, and so you can be on talk radio. So check out my website at www.heartlinkinstitute.com and learn more about that, about the guest sponsor. Or you can just email me at guestsponsor@cabiz.net. That's CABIZ.net. Stands for California Biz. Okay, and you can also learn about what I do, and I am a transformational coach, counselor, and educator. And I also created an oracle, which consists of 64 cards, along with a book, and it is called the Crop Circle Cards. So if you go to my website at heartlinkinstitute.com, you can find out about that, as well as my up-and-coming workshop we're going to be giving on the 26th of this month, two-day workshop. So check out Blueprinting Your Life in Light. And let sacred love flow through you now. And the blessing of the day comes from the Gayatri Prayer. Let us focus on that effulgent light from which the whole universe is projected. May this inner sun enlighten our minds and hearts, and may we awaken as that light. So good things are coming your way, and without further ado, let me introduce my guest. That is Dr. Hank Wesselman. He's an anthropologist who received his doctoral degree from the University of California at Berkeley. And he has worked with an international group of scientists for much of the last 30 years, exploring East Africa's Great Rift Valley in search of answers of the mystery of human origins. He is a leading voice in the modern mystical movement of direct experience with the spiritual realms. He offers experiential workshops in shamanism. And his website is www.sharedwisdom.com. And welcome, Dr. Hank Wesselman. How are you?
Well, thank you very much. You know, as I may have mentioned, I'm a little frayed because I've been on the road for the past 20 days offering workshops at Esalen Institute in California, which is currently under siege by a fire, interestingly. Within days after we left, all these great fires started in California. And then I've just come back from the Omega Institute on the East Coast near New York City. So yesterday and the day before, I traveled for 2 days from New York to California and from California to Hawaii. So I was very glad to get home last night and see my family and see my plants and cats and all that business, you know.
Well, I'm so glad we get to speak with you today and that you...
Well, it's wonderful to hear this introduction because, you know, as you give it, you know, I sort of sit back and listen and I think, gee, is that really me? Really?
Some of it may just be an illusion.
Well, when you introduced me as the Indiana Jones, you know, Indiana Jones is an interesting person because he's become kind of a cultural archetype. He embodies the archaeologist, but, you know, he sort of runs a very fine line between being an archaeologist and being a looter.
Yeah.
You never see him down there in the trenches with his trowel, you know, sort of digging away in the sun at 114 degrees with sweat dropping off the end of his nose, you know, scratching away hoping for pay dirt. You always see him dashing from one place to another, sometimes on a horse, you know, clutching treasures which he's sort of absconded from the villains with, you know, that sort of thing. He's given archaeology a real upgrade, though.
Well, he is in the recently come out, you know, with a new movie about the Crystal Skull. Which...
Yeah, gosh, yeah, I haven't seen it yet. Have you seen it?
Oh, yes, uh-huh.
Is it good?
I think so. You know, it's as movies go these days, especially because it was speaking to the Crystal Skull and, you know, that phenomena. So it was, and it was speaking about extraterrestrials. So I thought that was very interesting.
Extraterrestrials, huh?
Yeah.
I've run into extraterrestrials, you know, but in all my visionary field work, I've never run into these guys.
Oh.
I've never run into these guys, and, you know, I really can't say with authority who or what they are, although I've read a lot of stuff about them.
I read somewhere, I don't know why, but I thought something that you wrote about had to do with extraterrestrials, but I guess maybe I'm wrong. I thought maybe you might have tripped into them accidentally as you were on one of your journeys, time travel journey.
Well, you know, there's always a chance that they're not extraterrestrials at all.
Uh-huh.
That they're really archetypal forces that we call spirits, and we perceive them in a certain way because we have a cultural lens through which we see the world. And that cultural lens has been determined to a large degree in our time by Hollywood and the media. And so since we've been sort of deluged with films ever since It Came from Outer Space and The Day the Earth Stood Still, back in the 50s, you know, we've had this cultural stereotype of aliens
mm-hmm.
coming in disc-shaped spaceships, coming to the Earth, absconding with human beings, subjecting them to dreadful experiences, mm-hmm. and so forth and so on. And I've often wondered if these could be people's fears coming to them.
I would think
dreams.
So, yeah. I mean, that would make sense to me. I think that there's a lot of disinformation that's being banded about to create fear, you know, to use psychology against us in some fashion. And maybe they're interdimensional beings. And as we grow in our consciousness, you know, the more highly evolved ones are the ones that we contact.
That we attract. It's entirely possible. You know, one of the best pieces I've read on the whole extraterrestrial phenomenon is the last book by the psychiatrist, Dr. John Mack, M-A-C-K, from Harvard.
Mm-hmm.
It was called Passport to the Cosmos. Passport to the Cosmos. And it essentially equates the shamanic experience with the alien abduction experience.
Well, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yes, it does. It makes a lot of sense to me, too. Although I can't claim to have ever had contact with these guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe they just leave people like me alone. I don't know.
Well, I mean, you know, now you're going into my field of expertise. I'm a ufologist from over 25 years, so but I want to get back on track here.
Okay, on track.
With what you are doing these days, and as you say, you just gave a workshop. What was that about? What kind of workshop did you give?
Well, my wife and I, when we teach together, and I, when I teach by myself, offer three levels of training. Called the Vision Seeker Workshops. And the Vision Seeker Workshops are five-day trainings, Vision Seeker Level 1, Level 2, and Level 3. Level 1 is really about the personal self. It's about training people in the shamanic method of direct revelation. In fact, I'm currently writing a book with Sandra Ingerman called The Path of Direct Revelation, A Guide for the Modern Visionary, which will be out from Sounds True in a couple of years. You know, it takes a while for them to get books out now. But, you know, what I do is I really introduce people to the path of direct revelation, in which each person becomes their own priest, their own prophet, their own teacher, making direct contact with these transpersonal levels of reality themselves, without the need for any scripture or any religious organization standing between them and their own direct contact with the sacred realms. So in the Vision Seeker Level 1, which we just did at Omega, we reconnected people with their inner sources of wisdom and power that people call spirits. And once you're in contact with your spirits, life has a way of becoming an incredibly enhanced adventure. We also taught people how to empower those who have lost their power. This is one of the commonest things that shamanic practitioners do, restore power to those that have lost it. Then we went in the direction of something that you and I talked about before, the nature of the soul. And we talked about the three souls from the shamanic perspective of the Kahuna mystics of Polynesia. And, of course, all this is done with experiential journey work, in which people are accessing the other side on a regular basis throughout the week and connecting with the transpersonal forces that we're bringing them into alignment with. We then turn toward the ancestors, and we reconnect people with ancestors who love them. We connect them with their own transpersonal self, the higher self or oversoul, which contains files of all of our past selves. In other words, our past lives. It's kind of like doing past life regression work, but we're not using hypnosis to do it. We're using the transpersonal method of direct revelation, which is incredibly easy to learn. You know, Gariel, if I've got this right, and I believe I do, each one of us possesses a program on our inner hard drive. Now, your inner hard drive is your DNA. It's your genetic code. And we know a lot about this in a genetic sense now. But I sense that somewhere, along those lengths of genetic material, there is a program. And when that program is double-clicked with the right mouse, it allows consciousness to expand in a dramatic fashion, allowing us to access the world of things hidden, which is so familiar to the shamanic peoples of the world. So, you know, in doing this, you know, I have watched absolutely intrigued as non-tribal Western people like ourselves vision successfully on the very first attempt. I use the drum. I use the rattle, a kind of shamanic driving technique, a sonic driving technique, to help people alter consciousness. And I've watched people go into these realms of things hidden successfully, often on the very first time, returning with stories which would pass muster at any Aboriginal campfire. So my inner scientist is really impressed by the integrity of these experiences, as well as the transpersonal power that they obviously convey on those who experience them. That's sort of it in a nutshell. And so the first level, the first five-day training is about the personal self. The second five-day training is about spirit medicine, and we train people to become shamanic healers. We train them in how to work with the elemental spirits, for example, who are immensely powerful, and how to do shamanic extraction work, where you actually extract illness-causing intrusions from a person's field with the help of your helping spirits. We talk about and train people to do things like soul retrieval, which is about mending the fabric of a person's soul when they've been damaged. And I believe you're going to talk to my wife, Jill, about that later this month.
I sure am. I'm looking forward to it.
And then we use a couple of methods to bring people into the experience of shamanic initiation. And then we finish up the week with a cosmic journey, in which we go to regions where no human beings have gone before, at least not in this life. And so the third level, this leads into the third level, which is about the cosmic self. And we spend the entire week in the shamanic upper worlds, which Judeo-Christian people call heaven. And we explore the dimensional levels of the heavens, the afterlife state of the human soul cluster, where we go when we die, and what we can expect to find in those regions. We also make journeys to places like the library, which some people call the Akashic Records, where each one of us has a life book, and in that life book are recorded all of our past lives. So we go to the library and we ask one of the archivists to convey us to or bring us to our life book, and then we sit and peruse our most recent lives and look for patterns which may shed light on the current life that we're involved in right now. So these workshops are really quite extraordinary, and people, you know, say that they're life-changing, which is always very gratifying, mm-hmm. because the goal here is to help create something within the transformational community, to give people new tools for their toolkit, so that all of those natural visionaries out there in suburbia and urbia at large can access these realms by themselves for wisdom, for information, for healing, even to make contact with the souls of recently deceased friends and relatives, which is very easy to do if you know how to do it. And there's no great mystery about it once you understand how this program on your inner hard drive works. That's kind of a nutshell. It's quite a lot, though, don't you think?
Well, I'm hoping you can give us a short example of the sacred garden, maybe later on or when it feels right to you, and because I think then people can really get a flavor for a tool that I think has become very valuable to me. As I've been doing this work now since I got your book, and uh-huh. it's called The Journey of the Sacred Garden, and it's powerful, and it even comes with a CD, which is great, with the drums and the rattle sounds to help to go into that altered state. So maybe we can, do you think we could do a brief kind of Sacred Garden exercise?
We could. Would you like to do it right now?
I would love to.
Well, first of all, this journey that you're talking about, the Sacred Garden, this is an introductory journey that Jill and I offer in our workshops to help bring people into their inner place within the dream world, their personal place of power and healing. And many of us as children had such a place, kind of an imaginal place where we met with our teddy bears and had tea parties, you know, things like that. Mm-hmm. You know, 61% of people in the United States, when polled, this was a Gallup poll some time ago, about 8 or 9 years ago, 61% revealed that they had imaginary friends when they were children. Now, this is really quite a striking number when you think about that. Mm-hmm. That means over 100 million people in this country, maybe closer to 150 million, have had contact with the spiritual realms. As at least as children. And then there are those 43% who claim that they've had at least one paranormal experience in which they've been carried across some unknown inner threshold into the land of visions and spirits. This was a Gallup poll that was conducted in the late 1980s. It's very often cited in books. This reveals that, you know, probably about, you know, 50% or more of us have the program and are just naturals at doing this.
Are you saying we're shamans, latent shamans?
Well, you know what? Really what defines the shaman?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of confusion in our culture about who shamans are and who shamans aren't. The shaman, you know, when we conjure up an image of a shaman, most of us tend to see a masked and costumed tribal person dancing around a fire in the dark, involved in some mysterious ritual, accompanied by drum beats. And that's a pretty good description. But the cultural shell of mass costume and ritual, this varies as you go from culture to culture to culture. And the rituals, the costumes, the objects, they can be very powerful things in themselves. But they're not really needed. Because inside that cultural shell of mask, costume, and ritual, there's a man or a woman who has the program. And the program allows them to access this expanded state of awareness easily. Shamans are inevitably people who discover, often by accident, that they have the ability to go into trance. They have the ability to access very, very easily. They can do it with their eyes closed, or they can do it with their eyes open. In many ways, it's a lot like daydreaming, except the shaman does it with focus, with intention, with directional focus, so that they control the direction of where they're going and what they're accomplishing while they're in this expanded state of awareness. So the shaman is typically a person who discovers that they can go into this alternate reality, which traditional people call the spirit world, where they encounter extra-mundane personalities that mystics and shamans and visionaries all over the world call spirits. Now, we could call them transpersonal forces or archetypal forces. It doesn't really matter what we call them. They reside in this inner world, and they've been coming into contact with human beings for tens of thousands of years in order to be of service to us. These are compassionate, helping spirits who include the angelic forces. And I say this with deliberation because there are a lot of well-intentioned but often misinformed religious-type people out there who think that what shamans do is the devil's work, and nothing could be farther from the truth. The shaman is actually the ancestor, the ancestral precursor of all of today's religious practitioners, priests, priestesses, bishops, cardinals, even the Pope himself. So the shaman is the visionary who goes into the other world, connects with spirits, and through relationship with these spirits, the shaman is able to do various things, initially on behalf of themselves, and then increasingly on behalf of other people. You with me?
I am.
Well, what sorts of things do they do? Well, I've mentioned some of them with the Visions to Go on workshop. Restoring power to those who've lost it. This is very easy to do if you know how to do it. Accessing information through divination from the spirits who are in alliance with them. Doing healing work on the physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual levels of being, both of the self and of others. Guiding the souls of the dead to where they're supposed to go in the afterlife. You know, things like that. The shaman is the classic geographer of the mystic realms, I guess you could say. The shaman is like the Indiana Jones of the extraterrestrial regions. And both men and women go into these regions for various, intentions, for various reasons. And where you go and what you experience is largely determined through your intentionality. So focusing on your intentions with a powerful physical stimulus like the drum, which helps to double-click the program, allows this inner window to open, allowing the shaman to access these inner worlds. Now, the place in the inner worlds, which I've called the sacred garden, I call it a garden because you can do things there. You can do garden work. But usually we ask people to bring up a place, a memory of a place that they've been to in nature, a place where they feel very connected, very strong, very centered, very calm, very at peace. You know, it's like remembering that special trip you took to the Adirondacks or to Hawaii or to Big Sur or to Yosemite National Park. You know, it could be even your own neighborhood where there's a special place along the river, along the stream, a pond in the woods. It can be any place that you choose, but it's usually a place in nature. And the reason that this is important is most of us discover through direct experience that the power, the mystical power that Obi-Wan Kenobi called the Force, is not only real, but it's most easily accessed in the natural world, in nature. That's where it's concentrated, in living things. So I usually ask people to bring up a memory of a place in nature that can be their sacred garden. And most people can conjure up a place like that from their memory banks fairly quickly. But it could be a completely imaginal place, like Peter Pan's Neverland, for example, or Dorothy's Wonderland, a place where you suddenly find yourself having adventures with animals that can talk, and where there are pirates and crocodiles and Indians and mermaids and rainbows and so forth and so on. It's a magical inner place. Now, this inner place operates by four rules. And we discovered this through direct experience. First of all, everything in a person's sacred garden is symbolic. Now, you might ask, of what is it symbolic? And the answer would be, well, it's symbolic of some aspect of yourself or some aspect of your life experience. In other words, a memory. What that means is the tree, the sacred grandmother oak tree in your garden, could be symbolic of your own inner strength and resilience. The pond of water in your garden could be symbolic of the waters of peace and reconciliation. Things like that. So the first rule, everything in your garden is symbolic. The second rule is that you can communicate with everything in your garden. That means you can talk to the tree, you can talk to the pond, you can talk to the waterfall, you can talk to the birds and the crabs and the rocks, and they'll communicate back with you, but you have to learn how to listen, because there's no assurance that a rock or a rainbow or a tree is going to speak the king's English. The information may come in the form of impressions or psychic downloads. The third role of the garden is that the garden can be changed. You can do garden work. Let's say that you've chosen a place that doesn't have a waterfall, and you'd like to have a waterfall. Well, you can create one with your creative imagination, and there will be a waterfall in your garden. If you'd like to have sunflowers or roses or a ring of stones, you could create them in your garden. You can create a healing space where your spirits can come to work on you for your own personal healing, or the souls of your friends and family members can be brought there as well. Well, the fourth rule is where the magic is. When you change your garden, when you add something to your garden, or for that matter, delete something from your garden that you find there, some aspect of you or your life experience is going to change in response. That's magic. Because what we're doing is we're accessing the realm of things hidden. We're accessing the dream world. And the sacred world and the dream world are the same place. And we're accessing the power that's available in these arenas of reality in order to manifest change. Change within ourselves, change within our world. Now, I'll give you an interesting story to bring this to life. About 10 years ago, I was in Sacramento, where I was living at that time, and there was an older woman in my workshop. It was a weekend workshop, Friday night, all day Saturday, all day Sunday. And the first journey that we did, the first experiential exercise was a journey to the sacred garden. And so I sent everybody off to their gardens, and I was drumming away, and everybody was lying on the floor with an eye curtain over their eyes, and they were accessing. They were going into this sacred space that they were bringing up for themselves. And at the end of the journey, this woman came to me and said, she looked upset. She said, "Could I talk to you during the break?" And I said, "Sure." So she approached me during the break, and she said, "I've always had this inner place. And it's always sustained me, especially when I was a little girl. I had this kind of inner garden that was kind of like an English garden. And there were all these flower beds, and they were always in flower. And there were trees, and they were neatly trimmed, and they were always in flower, too. And there was a little lake, and there were always swans on the lake. And I had sort of a little English cottage with a thatched roof. And that's where I would go to meet with my teddy bears and have tea parties, things like that." So today, she told me, "I went back to this place. I haven't been there in years. And I got a real shock." She said, "My garden is in ruins." She said, "There are these vines that are growing all over the trees, strangling the trees, blotting out the light. And these are not friendly-looking vines. They're kind of yellowish and spiny and sickly. And they're growing over my house, and they've invaded the flower beds. They've even invaded the lake, and the swans are no longer here." And as she's telling me this, I'm scanning her. Now, you and I both know that it's really not all right to scan people unless you have their permission to do so. But, you and I also know that a lot of people with psychic awareness like to do that because it's just one of their natural abilities. Well, in this case, because she seemed to be more and more and more upset and understanding that everything in the garden is symbolic somehow of herself, I decided to open up that inner eye that most people call the third eye and that some shamans call the strong eye. And so I looked her over as she's telling me this story. And when she comes to the end, without really thinking about it, my mouth drops open and I asked her a question. I said, "Do you have cancer?" Now, that wasn't an exceptionally tactful thing to ask her, but it seemed immediate and appropriate at the time. Well, she gave me this stricken look and burst into tears. Now, when she'd recovered enough to talk, what she informed me was that 10 days before, she had been diagnosed with metastatic cancer, and it was very serious. And so far, only she and her doctors knew. She hadn't even been able to share this with her family yet. You know, she was sort of still in the denial phase. You with me?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, she said, what am I going to do? And burst into tears again. So I looked at her and I said, you've come to the right person. And she sort of glanced at me, startled, and I said, do you remember when I talked to you about shamans about an hour ago, and we talked about shamans and how they have these helping spirits who assist them in various ways? I said, well, you know, shamans, when they do healing work, they bring in these healing masters who assist them in whatever it is they're trying to facilitate. So I said, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to understand that this unrestrained growth in your garden is symbolic of the unrestrained growth in your body. These vines are symbolic of your cancer, which is out of control.
Wow.
I said, cancer is very easy to cure. It's just simply cell division run amok. And the classic causes of cancer are either when a person has lost their power or when a person has fallen into a steep state of disharmony within themselves. In other words, when they've had some sort of catastrophic loss experience. And in talking with her, she revealed that she had, in fact, had such a catastrophic loss experience within 6 months before being diagnosed with cancer.
Wow.
So I said, okay, now I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to take you back into your garden. And since shamans work with helping spirits, I want you to bring in a whole team of spirit helpers. I want you to bring in spirit gardeners. And what you're going to do with these gardeners is you're going to go to work and you're going to start chopping all those vines out of your garden. Ask your spirit helpers to just take them out of your garden and remove them. Well, she thought this was a good idea. So I even amped it up a little bit. You know, I'm a bonsai person, and so I know a lot about Japanese gardening. And I know how ruthless the Japanese are as gardeners. I mean, Japanese gardens are very tightly controlled. So I said, why don't you make it a team of Japanese gardeners? And she laughed. Well, the minute she laughed, her healing began. And that's exactly what she did. She went back to her garden. She brought in a group of Japanese gardeners, 20 or 30 of them. And with her help, they went to work chopping out all the vines in her garden. Well, by the end of the weekend, they barely made a dent, and the vines were still growing. So I got out my shamanic RX pad, and I said to her, okay, shamanic journey work, twice a day, three times on Sunday, chop vines. Now, this was before my little book, The Journey to the Sacred Garden, had come out, with that CD, which is in the sleeve in the back cover. Okay, that CD has tracks of my drum and my rattle to assist in journey work. But she did find a tape of shamanic drumming. And so she followed my advice. And every day, twice a day, she went to her garden, called in her spirit helpers, and they went to work on the vines three times on Sunday. Well, 3 months later, I get a letter from her. And her letter is just filled with joy. She's been going to her garden every day, and finally, every shoot, every sprig, every vine, every seed, gone. Her garden is clear of vines, and the swans are back. Good sign. Guess what happens next? Her cancer went into remission. And she had very serious cancer.
That was fantastic.
And it never returned, as far as I know. Mm. Now, this is a very good medicine story because it demonstrates how powerful these inner realms can be. You see, everything in the dream world has a reflection into our world. And everything in our world reflects back into the dream world. So transpersonal healers, which is what visionaries are, transpersonal healers work on the spiritual aspect of an illness. And if you can diminish it at the spiritual level, it will diminish its energetic and its physical expression here into our world. And this really is how all shamanic healing works. Mm-hmm. The Sacred Garden is a wonderful place to do this. And that little book, as you saw, you know, it's a little book that you can read it in a couple of hours. You know, it's an easy read with one-page chapters. Hello. You know, that's the kind of book I like now. You know, it's hard for me to read these big, thick books. You know, I just simply don't have the time anymore. Anyway, that's just one example of how one can use the Sacred Garden as a way to affect change in one's life. In this case, it was healing.
Well, and I imagine you can use it for a number of things, and besides healing, empowerment is one thing that comes to mind. Certainly, that is healing, actually, and manifesting, and other things that you can do in the garden. I mean, you call in all sorts of wonderful guides and teachers into the garden, and so you can heal addictions in the garden. I mean, there's just so many things that you can do. So you're accessing a number of realities in the garden. Or it's like a gateway, I think is what you call it, to the other realities or other levels of dimensions. Can you give us some more insight as to what is that the subconscious that we're working with, or is that what level of the soul, I guess, is what I'm wondering, does the garden work on?
Well, in our talk, I think we talked about this the last time we talked about the three
levels
of the soul.
Why don't we briefly go over the different levels of the soul so we can, our audience can catch up with what we know?
Well, that's a good place to start. In Hawaii, I'm living in Hawaii right now, and I apologize to any of you who are having trouble hearing me. You know, I'm talking to you from an island in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, and it's very foggy right now with a volcano, and I have no idea what all that sulfur in the atmosphere is doing to transmissions through satellites and things. Anyway, the Kahuna mystics of Polynesia understand that we have not one but three distinct souls, and they all come from the same source, but they exist in very different states of quality. For example, the immortal aspect of the self, what most people refer to when they talk about the soul, is actually our higher self, or our oversoul, that exists always in heaven. There is a realm in heaven where all the human oversouls live. They reside there throughout eternity. And our oversoul, in other words, your oversoul, if I were talking to you directly, Carol, I would say, before you were born, your oversoul divided itself. And it sent in a seed of its light, a gift of its light, which took up residence in your embodiment when you drew your first breath. Now, this is a very interesting awareness, insight that the Kahunas of Polynesia have had for thousands of years. They've understood that the vehicle of transfer is the breath. Is the breath. When we emerge from our mother's bodies and we take our first breath, the incoming soul takes up residence within the new embodiment for a new life. And when it does, it encounters a distinct and separate soul which is already in residence. Now, this is the body soul, the physical soul, the soul of the body. And it was sourced to us from two directions, from our mother and from our father. Because in the same way that the sex cells, the gametes, the sperm and the egg, the sperm from the father, the egg from the mother, in the same way that they carried genetic information from both the mother's lineage and the father's lineage, which came together at fertilization to create a new pattern, in the same way the sex cells carry a psychic energetic template from the mother and from the father, which includes all ancestral imprints from the mother's lineage and the father's lineage. This comes together to create a new energetic pattern around and within which the embryo grows into a fetus, which eventually is ready to be born as a human being. And, of course, we're talking about humans. We could also say that this is true of horses and dogs and cats and every other creature in creation. This is how it works. So this body soul is really what many call the energy body, around and within which the physical body is formed during life and maintained during life, even restored and repaired, because it carries that blueprint, both the genetic blueprint as well as the psychic energetic blueprint. Now, the body soul and the oversoul seed need to form an alliance, and the first chore, the first challenge for the incoming oversoul is to form a good working relationship with this body soul. And sometimes this is tough because we may be born into a family of folks who are of lower vibrational energy than we are. Now, I don't have to define that because everyone out there and among your listeners knows examples of people who really felt that they fell into the wrong nest, you know, that they were born into the wrong family. How did I get into this family? I'm not like these people. Well, of course, that's the topic of another conversation at a future time. But the fact is, usually a relationship is formed between these two, the physical soul and the spiritual soul. And it is then that the third soul begins to take form. This is what we would call the mental soul, the intellect, the aspect of ourself that thinks, analyzes, integrates, makes decisions, and directs. It's kind of like our inner director, our inner chief, our inner CEO. And how well our inner chief leads or steers us through life depends on the beliefs and values that it holds to be true. Now, it's interesting because the Polynesian mystics understood that the mental soul holds all of these beliefs and convictions about reality that it essentially forms. For example, if you believe yourself to be powerless, it may be that you lead your life in a victim role and you're not going to have a very interesting life. However, if you come to believe that you're powerful, you'll have a very different quality of life. This is what is meant by, you know, people saying, well, people create their own reality. That's true. And the reality that we create is created by the mental soul. This also reveals that the mental soul is the source of our creative imagination, our creativity. And this is very important because the mental soul can create thought forms or goals of things that it wishes to achieve or acquire. And it's in this way that we grow, increase, and become more than we were in response to life. Now, the physical soul has very different functions. The physical soul is where our memories are stored. It's the source of our emotions and feelings. It is the interface between ourself and the other, which means it is the perceiver of both the world of things seen and the world of things hidden. This in turn reveals that the physical soul, which psychologists call the subconscious, a psychological term finally, the subconscious, this is where that inner doorway to the inner worlds is. It's in the body. It's in the body soul. Specifically, it's in the heart. The heart is the gate into the realm of things hidden. And so really, to get in touch with these inner worlds, we have to turn towards ourselves, towards our heart, and open that gate. And this tells you immediately that you're going into a realm that is safe, that is secure, where you're not going to meet any bad guys, where the spirits are helpful, where we encounter our helpers and our teachers and our guides. So in answer to your question, the question is, you know, where do we find this inner garden? We do it by turning within. As Jesus of Nazareth and all the great saints and sages across time have already attested, all true power comes from within. So we connect with our own personal power, and the sacred garden is a great place to do that by turning within the self in order to do that. The oversoul, the higher self, functions as our teacher, as our spirit teacher during life. And since it always maintains an active link with that probe that it is placed within us, that seed of light which we took in with our first breath, it can send downloads and impressions, intuitions, inspirations, hunches, slips of the tongue, dreams, visions. So it reveals that the higher self is really the source of our intuition and our inspiration. It's the higher self, the oversoul, that dreams. You know, I sometimes ask people in my workshops when we're going through this material and accessing it directly through the experiential method, I'll ask them, well, when you're dreaming at night or when you're actively daydreaming during the day or visioning, who's dreaming? It's kind of a Zen question. And they all scratch their heads and they think for a minute, and then, of course, the answer dawns. It's the higher self that dreams. And when we're dreaming, we're actually accessing our higher self in the other world. We do that at night when we're asleep, and through workshops and training, I sort of bring people into connection with his higher self in experiential settings so that they can access that higher self anytime, any place when there's need to do that.
Are you saying, though, that you first have to go through the lower soul or body soul in order to access the higher oversoul?
That's an interesting question, isn't it? You know, I know all sorts of people in the world of anthropology, for example, who are absolute. They've read every paper on shamanism. They've read every book, but they can't do it.
Yeah.
Because I don't believe you can do it through the intellect.
Yeah.
All right, the mental soul, what we call the higher mind or the ego or the conscious mind of Jung, this is the aspect of ourself that thinks, but it's not the aspect of ourself that feels. That aspect is the physical soul, the body soul, the subconscious, and that's where the doorway is.
Mm-hmm. It is the gateway, apparently, into the higher realms and the higher self.
That's right.
Wow.
The gateway to the higher realms is within us. It always has been, and it always will be. Now, the interesting thing is that a traditionally trained psychologist would say, well, it's only there if you believe that it's there. Ha. You know, I would have to disagree, and I would have to say that after 26 years of apprenticeship in this tradition, I know with absolute certainty that that doorway is there whether or not that you believe it's there. And the trick lies in learning how to open it. So that's why training workshops are very helpful, because we guide people through this process without drugs, without hallucinogens, although that's one way to do it.
We're going to do that in 5 minutes. Could we do that?
Yes, but if you're going to play the drum, you should tell people, if they're driving a car, to turn down the volume to barely audible, because you don't want to go into trance when you're driving on the freeway.
Mm. Okay, that's important.
Okay, so no driving heavy machinery when listening to this CD.
Yeah, it should be strictly, you should be focused on that.
Well, you know, I was on Coast to Coast with Art Bell, perhaps it was George Nuri, several years ago, and he said, let's put some of this on, and he only had it on for about 20 seconds, and we were flooded by calls from all over the country.
Well, that's a good point, so that if anyone is driving listening to this show, they probably should pull over.
Well, if they can.
Otherwise,
they could just turn down the volume so it doesn't affect them.
Yeah, very, very good point. And, you must, in other words, really focus on us, the show, for the next few minutes or else just, turn it down. Okay. We want people to be safe, and we're going to definitely suggest that everyone is safe.
Right. Well, this CD is designed to bring you into the trance experience.
Mm-hmm.
And often people hear it, and I mean, they're just off like a shot. Mm-hmm. So if they're driving a car, that's definitely not the time to do this.
Well, we only have about 5 minutes just to give us a kind of an entryway into the garden. And I guess what I'm suggesting is that you show us how it's done. We don't have the music playing, but can you just guide us into the garden?
Well, you could do it as a guided visualization with somebody talking you through it.
Okay.
But the beauty of the shamanic method is that each person forms their intention for themselves and then goes into the journey and allows it to unfold without anybody directing the process. And, you know, people experience visions and other worlds which are really quite extraordinary. You know, they perceive things that they never believed was possible. And they discover that they have the program and the process.
Well, then what we might just suggest, rather than actually taking them through the garden right now, is once our show is over, they might want to just settle in and do a short meditation with...
It is actually a form of meditation.
Okay, good. I'm glad you... are taking time to just go within to the Sacred Garden, I guess, is the best way.
Well, you know, you could try it with the CD. I think it would give people an interesting idea about what's possible and what it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
If your engineer has it set up, is that true?
No, we didn't have enough foresight to do that.
Okay, no problem.
Yeah, but if you could just give us a setup and how, first of all, what's the first thing we should do before we even enter the garden?
What I do when I'm going to do shamanic journey work is I usually choose a time when I'm going to be alone in the house, when I'm not going to be walked in upon by my children or by my wife, like I'm alone in the house right now, so that would be a good time to do it. I also don't do it at night when I might fall asleep, because usually at night I'm tired. I also usually don't lie in my bed, because that's where I sleep. But what I will do is I'll throw a blanket or a throw down on the floor on a rug, and I often light a candle because it's very affirming to create light, and then I will form my intention for the journey. In this case, it would be to journey and into the other world, into the dream world, into what shamans call the middle world of dream, in order to find my sacred garden. And then I would put the CD on either a headphone or the big set, and I would lie down and cover my eyes and allow my conscious awareness to listen to this ancient sound of the drum. And I mean, it's a nice, or even a little faster than that, in a theta brainwave pattern. I would allow my conscious awareness to listen to this sound. And then very slowly, as my body relaxed, I would bring up an image of a place in nature that I've been to, which I love. And for me, my personal place of power and healing is a bay down at the ocean here on the island of Hawaii called Kealakekua Bay. It's a place where I went every day with my kids when they were little. And so I know every rock, every tree, every bush, every bird, you know, every crab. I know them. I mean, I can just see this place in my mind's eye, even while I'm talking to you on the phone. I can bring up the image of this place. And
you
then what
prayer.
I do is I refocus my awareness so it's like I'm there. And I mean really there.
You
I allow
prayer.
It to come to life. And I turn and I look around. I try to feel the sun on my skin or the breeze in my hair. I try to smell the flowers. I listen for the sound of the waves on the beach. I feel the sand under my feet, squinching between my toes. You know, things like that. I bring my whole sensory cognitive motive apparatus to life. And then I settle in. I settle in, and I take note of everything that is in my garden.
And Hank, sorry to interrupt. You say a protection prayer that you give in the book. When do you say that?
Well, you know, I don't emphasize that in beginning workshops because all of us have protection automatically by virtue of being in a physical body. But for those people who are a little fearful of this, I always turn my attention upwards to my higher self. I think of my higher self as the guys upstairs because I discovered that my higher self is not a singularity. It's actually a mosaic of all my former selves. And so I focus my awareness upwards. And I ask the guys upstairs to set my vibrations on high so that nothing or no one of equal or lesser vibration can get into my field and mess with me while I'm out of body.
Mm-hmm.
Now, while we here may not be fully aware of what setting your vibrations on high means, the guys upstairs know exactly what that means. And since they're always in connection with us, 24/7, the minute you ask for that protection, you've got it. And you're protected. It's that simple.
And we have only about 2 minutes left. We're back. And go ahead, Hank. We want you to finish.
I would just like to express my gratitude to you for having me on the show and for doing the work that you do in the world, because this is extraordinary work. If I've got this right, and I believe I do, there are around 70 million people in the United States alone who hold the beliefs and values that we do. They're members of the transformational community. It's a word that you used in your introduction, with another 100 million in Europe. These are not small numbers, and they appear to be growing. So it's important for all of us out there in the world to understand that we are traveling in the company of an enormous number of allies.
Wonderful. What a great note to end on. Thank you so much. And people, you've been listening to Dr. Hank Wesselman on Carrie L's HeartLink show. And I want to thank you again, Hank, for a great show.
Well, it's been my pleasure. I mean, you know, it's really wonderful to come on and know that your words are going out into the ears and hearts and souls of other spiritual seekers and that their life may change in response. I mean, what could be better than that?
And I'm so glad we've been able to connect to everyone and broaden our horizons towards more freedom, light, and love. And next week, or in 2 weeks, we will have Hank's wife, Jill Kai Kendall. Is that how you say it?
Well, she says Kirkendall.
Kirkendall, okay.
Yeah.
And she'll be speaking on soul retrieval. I'm looking forward to that. And thank you again for listening to our show. And have a good evening. Bye-bye.
Royal blessings on you.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye.